Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, Macbeth is currently on stage at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and of course, that's where you would expect to see the timeless Shakespearean tragedy. But thanks to my guest tonight, Macbeth is the horror psychological thriller that it was born to be. The co-directors of this production running through the end of June are no strangers to the stage or to the staging of Macbeth. Aaron Posner is a longtime award-winning theater director who founded the Arden Theater in Philadelphia and is currently an associate at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. He's also a graduate of Northwestern University. And his co-director for this project is none other than Teller, the famed half of the duo Penn and Teller, the bad boys of magic who've made films, television shows, played Broadway, and are currently the longest-running headliners in the history of Las Vegas. Wow! Teller and Posner both worked on The Tempest at Chicago Shakes back in 2015, and they first got together to adapt Macbeth at Folger in D.C. back in 2008, and they're in studio tonight to talk Shakespeare, magic, and Scottish tragedy.
Sure.
Get into that.
You can call Aaron it Macbeth. Yeah. You say Macbeth. Macbeth.
Yeah.
It's always theatrical bad luck to say Macbeth.
I know.
Macbeth. So we're sure to do that, and we whistle and wish each other good luck, which is also bad
also
luck.
Also bad, right? Yeah. How much do you pay attention to those, to the old superstitions of the theater? Do you pay attention to not naming Macbeth or good luck?
Exactly none. We pay exactly none attention to it.
Good.
We defy augury.
Why bring this? You guys, as I mentioned, you both did Macbeth on the East Coast back 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Why bring it to Chicago?
This is a really different conception of the play. It's similar in this. We believe it's a supernatural horror thriller, and that continues to be the case. But the first time we did it, we were in very small spaces, and we didn't really have our eyes on the supernatural element to the degree that we do now. Because now we have some weird sisters who are truly weird, truly, truly weird.
And our core way into the play, sort of following Teller's sensibility, has been one of, you know, if Shakespeare wrote a play in which he put in beheadings and floating daggers and witches and battles, this was not necessarily the deep political allegory that people want to make it like, you know, oh, it's all about ravening ambition. And, well, yeah, except that the real lesson of this one seems to be, you know, probably not best to kill your boss. And it doesn't actually go that much deeper than that. So we looked at it as for the fun of the horror thriller side of it, for the witches and the magic and the battles. Except what's been interesting from when we did it 10 years ago, as the world changes, great classics change. And a story where leadership is maybe not all you might want it to be, and political figures are falling and being knocked off on a rapid basis, and that no one really knows who to trust, has certain kind of resonances right now that it didn't have 10 years ago. Well, so that's going on too.
Why do you think it is that there are more interpretations along the line of the tragedy, as you just mentioned, as opposed to seeking out, as you guys do, a little bit more of the humor, a little bit more of the thriller, the horror, the stagecraft? Why do you think it's always more been done in a different interpretation?
Because that's easier. Mm-hmm. It's easier to say, well, we'll do a new take on Shakespeare. Let's set it in Nazi Germany. That's an easy sentence to say. It's a harder sentence to look at the text and say, there's a sentence in there, nothing is but what is not. Now, that's a really deep idea that resonates in so many ways, and that's the direction we're going.
Yeah, I mean, we also, you know, as a theater director who is reinterpreting Shakespeare a lot, when you have a teammate like Teller that can take the supernatural and bring it forward and actually have the magic be magical, as opposed to there's a lighting effect called gobo rotators that, you know, like, oh, it's spooky. Like you can make the light move. When that's the best you can often accomplish, but you don't actually have the capacity to make the magical disorienting, surprising, actually theatrical and shocking. The amazing thing about putting magic into Shakespeare is that it puts the audience in the same place as the characters are, unsettled, not knowing who to believe, not knowing whether to believe their eyes. And so that opens up possibilities that make it really exciting to re-explore the stories that way.
I have so many questions about that, and we'll get to it. I read in an interview that you discovered, or you read Macbeth as a kid at 12 years old, and you already start thinking about the staging of it. How much of this, Teller, is a dream project for you to work on this play?
All of it. there's no other reason for me to do this other than it is a dream project, and that I so enjoy working with Aaron, because I have a long-standing partnership with somebody, as you probably know, and I love collaboration, but I particularly love collaboration with somebody who thinks very differently from me, because that stretches me in an entirely different direction. And almost all of our decisions are not, oh yeah, let's just do that. All of our decisions are, let's pull it in both directions. Okay. So there's a tension, mm-hmm, that gets me places that I would never get on my own.
And same for me, which makes it such a great partnership.
Talk about the dynamic of the two of you working together, because you're in one of the most famous collaborations of all time with Penn and Teller, of course. But when you talk about theater, it's all about collaboration. Yeah. What is it that brings you guys back together to work together again?
Breakfast. Breakfast. I mean, this morning we had breakfast together, and we went through the play bit by bit, and we came to strong disagreements about things and agreed that as we continue to work on it, that we would come from the opposite directions and look at both things.
I think it's also that our values are incredibly similar. We're populists. Mm-hmm. We care that a reasonably intelligent 10-year-old kid can enjoy Shakespeare, and that is essential, that while we want scholars to enjoy it, it's Shakespeare for everyone. And that's deeply important to both of us. We like theatricality. We like things that aren't boring. I mean, there's a lot of shared values, yet we're used to painting with really different size paintbrushes and doing very different kinds of work. And neither of us are afraid of disagreements. And at some sort of healthy, our cast will tell you, yes, they disagree. And yet we disagree in a respectful, healthy, positive way that makes us both work harder and find new and exciting solutions instead of like, oh yeah, I guess that'll work.
That's Aaron Posner, Teller as well, in studio, the co-directors of Macbeth, which is at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, running through June. Take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about magic and the magic of the stage. Obviously, Shakespeare, I think of, we'll save it. We'll save it till after the break. It's The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, Aaron Posner and Teller, of course, from Penn and Teller.
Well, go ahead. Prove it. Prove it. Who knows my voice? I could be Joe Smith off the street.
That is so true.
Hi, I'm Joe Smith, but I'll pose as Teller.
The actor posing is,
and
right. The actor posing as Teller is here. Both these guys, the co-directors of Macbeth, which is at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, running through June. We've been talking about magic in the first segment, and there is something great about magic and Shakespeare. Obviously, The Tempest, which you guys did in 2015, and that was all about magic. That was the one play people will look at with Shakespeare and say, that's a magic play. Mm-hmm. But magic and the concept of trickery, or the concept of even the supernatural, is throughout Shakespeare. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's even in the existing stage directions of Macbeth. Things vanish, ghosts appear, witches hover over a cauldron, and specters emerge from that. And he was doing that on a brightly lit stage outdoors. We have all the advantages of a beautiful, new, amazing space where trickery is very, very much easier, I think, than it would have been for him. So we can do things in addition to just those.
Interesting.
But I suspect that when a witch vanished on his stage, it was more or less somebody jumping into a hole. And we ain't going to do that.
I love it because there's a lot in the stage direction, but I would assume, Aaron, just from your experience, that doesn't scream right away, I can't wait to make this magical for the audience. That's just the stage direction. It's been done a certain while. But there's something about the idea of seeing cauldron, spirits.
We're going a little farther than his stage directions. Mm-hmm. For example, there's a famous scene in which Lady Macbeth, who has been participating in a terrible murder and feels very bad about it, but doesn't realize it until she's sound asleep and sleepwalking, has hallucinations of blood all over her hands.
Damn spot, right?
Yeah, normally it's an actress looking at her hands and rubbing her hands, and we know what she's seeing. We share that with the audience. We take the audience inside what she's seeing. So, in essence, the bloodstains that she sees, we start to see. The more real they become to her, the more she smears them on her nightgown, the more she sees blood on her hands, so we see it as well.
Do you think that helps with empathy or understanding the characters when you can see the blood or the dagger? I know that's a big part of it, too, that you guys are able to actually make the dagger as opposed to we've seen Macbeth so many different times where he just talks about that he sees a dagger in front of him. Do you think that helps the audience understand what the direction or motivation of this character?
There's no given way to say whether it helps or not, but what it does is involve the audience and involve their own imagination. You know, people used to talk about, oh, theater, it's so much better than television and movies because the audience is actually there. Well, then television and movies got really, really good, you know, and what they can do is incredible, and we can't match that. But there is a live relationship that if we can get people's minds confused, engaged in other ways, as and collectively, and in this new space is both intimate and huge at the same time. And so if you have 700 other people sitting with you having a shared hallucination or being confused or amazed or astounded at the same moment, something really exciting and vibrating is happening in the space. And that is the thing that theater can do.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in a movie and doesn't happen on a video. And it's really exciting.
And it's also – it's one of the qualities of magic is that magic involves a sort of internal conflict as you're watching it. Because you watch it for what it seems to be, and you watch it saying, I know that can't be. And that tension is very intense. It becomes a very intense form of theater. So Mrs. Macbeth in our production is actually doing an astounding sleight of hand routine at the same time that she's playing that scene. So you get all of those levels of involvement and excitement and complexity and difficulty. I mean, this is a formidable job for an actor.
Yeah.
And
we have such a good one, too.
We have such a good one.
You know, there are all forms of lying, right? The play talks about equivocation, which is a form of lying. Magic is a form of lying. Acting is a form of lying. When I'm talking with actors all the time, I talk about doing things actually, like really, and really engaging. Let it be actually true. Except when I say actually, we're still lying, you know. So magic and acting just sort of join beautifully together, and that because they're just two different forms of the same
thing. And I would say too, and I think about all of what we know about Penn and Teller and what you guys have done on stage, and a lot of it has to do with putting the impossible on stage, where you're like, there's no way. I think of the amazing spectacle of Trimming the Rose, the piece that you've done for years. This idea that yes, you're confusing the audience, but you're putting them in this state of interest, but also not sure what's real, what's not, but the spectacle of it. There's something about the theatricality of it that you don't think about necessarily in magic because it's always been a certain way, meaning there's, you know, they wave the hands and have the audience be in amazement at what the magicians are doing on stage. But this is different. What you guys have always done has been more theatrical. Do you see it the same way with what you're doing with Macbeth, this idea of putting the impossible on stage, creating spectacle out of Shakespeare's play?
What I think about a lot is how to make horror beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful, magical horror all at the same time, it seduces you. If somebody has a traffic accident on the sidewalk, that's horrible, but it's not beautiful. And what we're trying to do is to take that horror and to turn that beautiful, amazing, uplifting, and awesome.
Teller, you said about amazement, about magic, and my favorite word in the theater is amazement. I talk about amazement all the time. And Shakespeare is all about amazement. Every day in a Shakespeare play, every event in a Shakespeare play is the most amazing day in that person's life. I always talk about the fact that in almost all the Shakespeare plays, every day is the day you would tell your grandkids about. Although in a lot of them, like this one, you don't actually live to have grandkids. but if you did, you would.
Right.
But it's the same kind of amazement. And also, I mean, the same thing that make Penn and Teller, among the many things that make Penn and Teller so incredible, is that it's also poetry. The piece you just talked about, Shadows,
poetry,
or the goldfish trick that Teller does. Like there's so many tricks that are part of Penn and Teller. Some of them are crass and some of them are political and some of them, there are all kinds of things, but a lot of them are beautiful and poetic, and that matches the sort of Shakespeare sensibility as well.
Do you see Macbeth as being beautiful?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. What occurs to me is that if you think of Lady Macbeth's sleepwalking blood production as a magic production routine, it has the best patter that was ever written for a magic routine. Out damned spot. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand. You wouldn't have heard David Copperfield say those words.
That's right. Teller in studio, of course, from Penn & Teller. Aaron Posner as well. They're co-directing Macbeth at Chicago Shakespeare Theater running through June. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. And we come back, we'll continue the conversation about Macbeth and magic here at the Big Table. So stay with us. Welcome back to The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, the co-directors of Macbeth at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, running through the end of June, June 25th. That's Aaron Posner and Teller from the famed Penn & Teller in studio. They are the co-directors talking about this adaptation, this production, which is at Chicago Shakespeare, which is different than the production you guys did back in 2008. Now, this for you, Teller. How much of this is a hobby vanity project as opposed, you know, the idea of, I've always wanted to do this? Or how much of it is, you know what, this is a career, this is something I wanted to do, I wanted to be a more serious director, as opposed to the act that I've done with Penn & Teller for years?
I'm at a very luxurious part of my career. I have a day job, a show in Las Vegas that has been there for 18 years and is very well established that I love doing. But I'm also at a point where if I have something that I'm in love with, like this project, and I talk to Penn very sweetly, I can get to do it. It's not an easy thing for me to do because I've been commuting to and from Chicago several days a week, running back to Vegas. Just a couple of days ago, I recorded The Big Bang Theory where I'm playing, you know, Amy's dad. So I'm running around kind of like a nut. I always look a little bit sleepless, but there's always like this grin on my face because this is just a thrilling, really difficult. I mean, it's the joy of taking something really hard and figuring it out. There's a little bit of murder mystery, I think, in our approach to it because mm-hmm. we're discovering stuff all the time.
You have had a tremendous career in theater. Both of you have. But, I mean, Teller, you're on Broadway. People forget the Broadway part of Penn & Teller. It is a career and a life dedicated to the stage. You do a lot of other things. I mean, obviously, film and television, there's no doubt. But you have committed your art, and you are a stage artist. You're a director, actor, the whole bit. Is that how you set out in your life? Did you think that was where you wanted to be at the age you're at now?
Well, when I was five, I got really sick and had to stay home a lot and sent away for a Howdy Doody magic set from TV. And the Howdy Doody magic set arrived. It was, I believe, three Mars bars and 50 cents, Mars bars wrappers and 50 cents. And it came in a little flat package. And I took it out. And I can just, I remember the depth of fascination that I had just playing with those magic props. It was like it had somehow just struck psychological bedrock, and I never shook it. And then through childhood, I got in plays, and I did magic shows in the backyard. And then I sort of became a little more sensible, and I said, well, you can't make a living as a magician, so you have to do something sensible. So I became a Latin teacher. There's a sensible. There's if you want to take home a good paycheck, become a Latin teacher. And I did that for 6 years, but all the while in the background, this was insistently pushing. And also I stuck closer and closer to theater. I had a really good acting teacher in high school who was also a magician, and that brought me closer to the theater. It connected magic to the theater for me. And then eventually after 6 years, I ran into Penn, and that changed everything.
I think of what Penn and Teller have been to so many different generations, and I use this word a lot, and I'm trying to stop, but you're disruptors in the way that you disrupted magic. And they're bad boys of magic. You explain the tricks on stage, even though you weren't. That's the beauty of it. But a lot of it was about disrupting. And Aaron, I'm going to bring you back in on this too, because it feels like a lot of that sentiment, that spirit, this idea of what people know Shakespeare to be and what it could be, it's evident as well in the production here that this is almost a disruptor for Shakespeare. This is a way to open that door, maybe take down the walls, the intimidating factor that people don't get in, go see Macbeth because they don't know what they're going to get into. Maybe they won't understand it. But this idea that there seems to be a similarity in the way that, Teller, you approached magic and the magic industry and how you guys are approaching Shakespeare.
What we do is simply respect the audience. And we also...
And respect the text and respect the story that we're telling and know that it's great and that it can be imagined and reimagined and that any of the received wisdom about the way you're supposed to do something doesn't have to be... That's not necessarily the best way to respect it or to bring it to life for people.
In high school, you generally have to read Shakespeare. Now, that automatically makes you hate him, right? Because you have to do something, it's got to be bad. But there's something that's really disturbing about that and sort of wrong about that, which is that Shakespeare is not a book. Shakespeare is writing plays. So when you hand a kid a Shakespearean text, it's exactly like handing a kid a score for a symphony. and saying, read this score of the symphony and imagine what it must sound like. Well, that's crazy. No kid can do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always been one who advocates even seeing a not good production of a Shakespeare play before you read it, so that at least you know what the music is supposed to be.
But better if it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no.
And, you know, and that's why doing this at Chicago Shakespeare, you know, which is a disruptive organization already, going like, who goes and puts a Shakespeare theater on Navy Pier? Who brings in the Q Brothers? Who makes another huge space that's totally flexible? There is a disruptive energy for artists that are being supported by an organization that says, like, no, we can do this better. We can make it amazing. What can we give you to make this work?
Right.
And how can we get you the best actors and all of the resources? It's exciting to be able to be doing this kind of disruptive work, and now with the kind of support that can really make it sort of fly.
There are Shakespeare scholars and people who spend their entire lives trying to understand the words and the text and the context and the subtext, everything that goes along with Shakespeare. Because this text is so rich and so unique, the question I have is really about communication. A lot of what Shakespeare work is what's not being said. And I think about this, and I was thinking about this today in the way that, Teller, you've made your whole career on not talking.
Hmm.
This idea that you have been expressive and nonverbal in your communication, but communicate everything. And if you watch Penn & Teller and have seen any of the shows, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I know more. I feel like I've communicated with you as an audience member, and I've never heard you speak. And I think of Shakespeare, and I think of the language and the barrier of people trying to understand that language, but then I think about what the characters aren't doing on stage or what they're not saying on stage. And it makes me think about the similarities. And just, I'd love to get your take on communication, on the idea of how you've approached communication in your career and how you see communication in Shakespeare.
My experience of nonverbal communication is this, that when you shut up and do something and the audience looks at you and you look at them, there is a level of intimacy that's almost like what we think of as mind reading. And I don't believe that really pertains to what we're doing in this play.
I do, only in that it's a big yes and, that Shakespeare is the kind of the reason people keep coming back for 400 years and that people keep wanting to re-explore it, is that it really, in some alchemical way, he brought it all. All the amazement, all the sort of grandeur of kings and of evil people and amazing heroes, of the remarkable women in both the good and the bad side. There's so much there. And our Shakespeare has been additive rather than subtractive, or rather than like, oh, pigeonholing it to one thing. It's like, how do we bring in the magic and music? André Plus and our percussionist Ronnie have created in a kind of and our weird sisters in trying to embody the supernatural world. We go like, how do you make the supernatural world come alive? Well, music is something that kind of connects us to other worlds and other realms.
And I guess the question, I rethink the question is just about, do you think differently about dialogue, and do you think differently about the presentation of a play when you've created a career when you don't speak? You know, you are the one of the best performers in the world of showbiz that doesn't use words. Does it make you a better director?
Probably not.
Probably so.
Really?
Well, he sees differently. That's partially the non-speaking, I think, and that's partially just the magician as well, and just the unique individual. But I watch with, you know, I'd like to think of myself as disruptive and innovative in the work I've done as a director and playwright, but I'm a more typical theater person. Teller is disruptive in his perspective just as a human being. And so the pull between – that's a nice thing.
Thank you.
I hope you're smiling.
I am.
So it's the pull between us, and that the theater is capable of so much more than it's often given credit for. And so I do think just the difference in our perspectives challenges audiences, engages people in different ways.
One thing that we absolutely agree on about Macbeth, I've seen a lot of really – dreadful productions of Macbeth.
We agree about that. I've seen a lot of
those. And what tends to make them dreadful is that they're so gloomy from the word go. Because this is the darkest play in history, right? There's no play that has more the word blood in it more. There's no play that says, you know, it's noon and there's no light out. The sun is being strangled. I mean, this is a dark, dark, dark play. But what gets missed is the fact that there's a thread of humor that goes through it. And without that thread of humor, it's dreary. I mean, I have seen on Broadway things that I left at intermission because it was just gloom, relentless gloom. And this is a story about a war hero, a really nice guy, a good guy, a superhero. I mean, he really
is
superhero in his character. And he's a good-humored superhero. And then he encounters one thing that says yes to him when that yes is a dangerous yes that just opens a little door in him.
Yeah.
And by letting him have that humor, and by the actor who's playing Macbeth is Ian Merrill-Peaks, and he is a wonderful comic actor. So he carries with him a sort of likability and a sense of humor that catches all the little glimmers of humor that reverberate off this play. So throughout, even in the depths of despair, he sees the irony of things, and he sadly laughs at it, but we sort of sadly really laugh with him, and with real, I mean, audible laughs where they should be. And that takes it way down. And, you know, my favorite movie of all time is Psycho. And it's partly because Psycho is so full of these wonderful moments of humor that are just, they're horrible, but they're very sweet. And that's what draws me into that. That doesn't draw me into all of the gloppy horror movies where it's just all, you know, roaring monsters and dripping things.
Wow, that's so interesting. Teller in studio, along with Aaron Posner. They are the co-directors of Macbeth at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, running through the end of June. I can't thank you both enough for being my guests tonight at the Big Table. It's great to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And good luck on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.